On today's show, we are discussing inappropriate reactions to the following. Meeting a movie star. Getting bottled by the wind.
Oh, even the wind hates us.
Replying to a Facebook thread on the House of Rugby Facebook group.
I think Cooney should actually be given a shot.
And chasing a losing bonus point.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. It was two wins from two for all the Irish teams across the board this weekend in the Guinness Six Nations. We will talk about the under-20s from Friday night, the women's team winning yesterday in atrocious conditions in Donnybrook. And we'll also talk about the men's win over Wales on Saturday and Andy Farrell and Ireland now suddenly in line for a triple crown and potentially a grand slam. That's where we're talking already. Trimby, you and I were together for the first time watching Six Nations game in Dublin.
Yeah. Felt like a watershed moment.
Yeah. We didn't go to the match. but we did, we hung out with Scott Faherty for the first time.
Hung out sounds like he was around at our house.
Yeah.
He was paid to be there. It was a corporate gig.
Yeah, he's got a great face.
He has a brilliant face.
Doesn't he?
We talked about this after, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, the shape is ideal and the beard. He mentioned his barber, actually.
He did.
He's got a very close relationship with his barber. His beard is perfect.
He's like your man from the 300.
Yeah.
The beard is perfect. His eyes are like sunken into his head in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way though. Like he's quite tough looking, but he's also got a little bit of charm.
Yeah, I felt he was like a movie star.
Yeah.
Looking at him. It's like, yeah.
Are you starstruck?
Have you? A little bit, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Just because, and more so because of the way the head in him.
Yeah. I didn't have any appreciation of the head of him before.
No. It's the scrum cap takes from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was always the thing, wasn't it? Have you met many movie stars?
I've met
you had that
James Nesbitt.
Wouldn't have the same.
No.
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 I wouldn't
have much of a head in him.
Yeah, I met is loose now with this.
But, you met Blind Boy recently.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh. When you say met.
I was coming back from Vegas, actually, after a end of season holiday, and I was in tatters. And as you would be, jet lagged to feck. And do you remember back then you had to fly into Heathrow, and they used to keep the Irish in a wing of Heathrow down at like gate 81 and 82. Where it was like way off, need to walk there for ages. And that was where I was flying from Heathrow to Dublin. And I was the last trudging through there. And I got there at about 7 a.m. to that. Once I landed, I went there just to get my connecting flight. But I had 5 hours before my next connecting flight. So there was no one there. And I got there. There was one man sitting alone at the gate. And he looked like wearing very cool hippie-esque clothes, a bit crusty. I went over and I didn't look at him closely, but I sat down across from him, and then I just gazed up, and it was Daniel Day-Lewis, and he was looking at me, and my face, I'd say, went something like this. and he just went, oh, for fuck. And picked up his bag and walked away. So that was...
You made an impression.
Yeah, he sat like about 30 metres away, and then I kept looking down at him to see if maybe...
Yeah.
But no, he was having none of it.
I was on a flight with Bob Geldof, actually, recently. I say I was on a flight with him.
He was on it.
Something similar, yeah. He was on it. And he looked a little bit crushy as well, actually.
Yeah, that's maybe the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I once met Mumford & Sons in Limerick. They played a gig, and I went to the gig, and then afterwards I was in the bar... And met your man from Mumford & Sons and Marcus Mumford, and I was chatting away to him. And then Paul Neville, former Connacht and Gary Owen, number 8, came up to me in the bar and was like, and he's no interest in music, but he happened to be at the gig, and he was like, has one of these lads got a famous girlfriend? And I was like, yes, Marcus Mumford has gone out with your one, Laura Marling. She's a singer-songwriter. And he was like, my missus wants me to get a photograph with her. And I was like, I know him. I'll bring you down. So I brought him down, and he was with his girlfriend, and I tapped him. I said, hey, Laura, would you mind if my mate got a photograph? And she was like, I'm Kerry. She was Kerry Mulligan, the Academy Award
winner. Oh, yes.
That was his ex-girlfriend I was talking about. Oh. So she just like shook her head. It was so fucking awkward, man. And then Paul Neville comes over with the phone. Is it all right? Do I get a photograph? No. So yeah, that was horrific.
It needs to be right up there to get a, like, to get a picture with, to get a selfie with, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Again, maybe about a year ago, Brienne of Tarth was on the same flight home from London to Belfast.
Great. Is she from Belfast?
No, she's English, but like, they were recording Belfast, and I hemmed and hawed for ages, and I was like, no, she's not famous enough to get a selfie with. But then she was standing right beside me at the paying for our ticket for the car park, and I was like, right, I'm going to get a selfie with.
You felt obliged to.
Yeah. But then I'd made that decision in my head, and then her driver just arrived, and like, oh, hi, darling. She's doing all this here with him, and I was like, right, stop it. I'm not getting involved in that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
She probably listens, though, so if she
I'd
is.
Say.
Apologies.
Yeah. Speaking of listeners.
Yeah.
We're introducing a new award. Mm-hmm. Penguin of the Week.
Penguin of the Week.
We're trying to boost penguin interaction with the show, and... I received one comment from one penguin in particular, which cracked us up.
I saw it.
Yeah, and he also, he's doing two jobs. First of all, he's entertaining us with a very, very amusing comment. Mm. And secondly, he's the penguin police in the Facebook group. He's making sure there's no typical boring cliches. Mm-hmm. No, you know, he's kind of policing that a little bit.
Penguin police, yeah.
Yeah, penguin police.
I'm just going to batter in penguins.
Yeah. We should have a separate
Violent
award.
Police.
Yeah, yeah. So I... Anybody you can see.
Did you make that?
Yes.
Specifically for the show?
Yes.
Brilliant.
I sat down with both children to make it.
Did they teach you how to make it?
No. I was a bit of a control freak with this. And they, eventually they just went back to the big show. So that's Penguin of the Week. And then There could be another one for Penguin Police of the Week. We could have that with just a baton.
Well, so what did he do again?
He was almost telling tales, really, on the rest of the group, the Penguin Police. He put a comment to the group. I don't know what it was, but he felt like it was supposed to get a little bit of banter going, a little bit of crack, a little bit of slagging. But he felt like it was met with a lot of serious comments and serious... cliched rugby opinions. Mm. So he thought this isn't the tone that Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby should be hitting. So he said some of the comments that came back to him kind of surprised him, and he said it was like having three Bernard Jackmans sitting on my chest while Murray Kinsler reads me the dictionary.
That's great.
So that was brilliant. And This guy's full on penguin as well. He's expecting. Me and him have hit it off, by the way.
This is just, you don't know this fella. It's
no,
just from being
his name's Sam B, 1984.
Come on, Sam.
Go on, Sam. So he's full on penguin. Mm-hmm. He got engaged outside the penguin enclosure at Dublin Zoo.
He did.
So he says. And congratulations to Sam. They're expecting their first child. He was going to call the child CJ Standard, sorry.
Yeah.
But it's a girl. So he has
CJ
a
from Baywatch.
Yeah, I know. I suggested that, mm-hmm. But he wanted the full name CJ Stander.
Okay, so what was his comment? It was about John Cooney sidestepping his own boot.
Yes, that was it. Sorry, yeah.
Which I did see that.
Which was amusing.
Yeah, and people were like, they started commenting about how John Cooney should be playing instead of Murray, as opposed to laughing at the fact that John Cooney sidestepped his own boot when it fell off.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the point that he was trying to get to. And he was like, why are we getting bogged down in the Cooney-Murray debate again?
Yeah. We appreciated that, Sam. Yeah. Thank you very much.
So we've got a wee trophy. The trophy, I cannot be arsed every Sunday
to make
that. Another trophy, so that's going to stay here, Sam.
It's an honorary one, like the six... do other teams get to keep the trophies when they get them?
Yeah, I wonder if we could have like a plaque where we kind of commemorate
his name on the back. No, of it
sounds like he's died.
Yeah. No, we'll put his name on it. There you go.
Yeah. Just stick his name on the back.
In black. So you open it. All right. Look, we've got loads to talk about. We have a weekend off next weekend, so we don't have to, I suppose, look too far forward. But we can definitely dive into Ireland beating Wales the weekend. Let's get Gerry Flannery out to join us and chat all about that.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
All right, welcome to the show, Fla. It's February.
It's Jafeb.
How are your New Year's resolutions going? How's your ripness going?
Mine's going quite well.
Yeah.
I'm en route to becoming ripped by the spring.
Well done.
#RipByTheSpring.
Doing what?
A few bike rides, spin classes, lifting a little bit, the odd row as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Flaz.
I've sent you.
Stuck into CrossFit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't a resolution. No, though.
You're very on brand on CrossFit brand.
I don't know. I like all the stuff that I'm good. I'm not really that good at any of the CrossFit stuff. Like the stuff I'm good at was
throwing the line out and stuff.
Yeah, no, well,
breakdown,
lifting weights slowly, and all their stuff is dynamic. And they don't do any of the stuff that I was kind of okay at, and just doing long runs. All the stuff that's kind of like boring is what I was good at. So then when they're trying to teach me it, I'm wrecked. Like I've done. Your man's trying to teach me something. I said, I can't learn anything at the moment. So, but it's good. It's good.
How's your back though? Like at our age.
Well, I'm older than both of you. Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. They have it written on the wall. They have a poster that said, "This is humbling." And like the first few times I went in, I said, "Right, I better do what I'm good at here." And I was trying to lift really heavy, like on a squat, and I already went into the squat rack and. Because you're like fatigued all the time, like, but it's been good. I've enjoyed it.
I did CrossFit with him once years ago when I had just retired, and I nearly died. That's probably to sum it up. It took me the whole drive home from Cork afterwards to recover. I was lying back, and it was only like a 20-minute session, but it was like
20 minutes, really.
Yeah, wasn't it? It was like lifts, clean and jerk, like a dumbbell, and then press ups against the wall, and
press ups, ring press ups.
Yeah. Oh my god! So he's selling it to me at the moment, and I'm.
But we had trained with Munster that day. We trained with Munster that day. We drove to the gym in the CrossFit gym. We were wearing full Munster kit, and I think whoever drove probably had something to do with Munster written on the side of their car. And this guy came out from the CrossFit gym and goes, "Oh, what are you, some sort of sports guys?" And I was like, "I don't expect you to know who we are, but like clearly we're either insane Munster fans that we've written Munster on the side of our car." And so we trained already. We'd done a double session that morning, and then we went in and did CrossFit in the afternoon. And the guy was kind of real dismissive of us. I think that's why we went so hard.
Oh, so hard. Yeah. But he's telling me isn't as hard tomorrow, so I might join.
People try to make an example of rugby guys. We had this with BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Have you ever done any of this?
Yeah.
For like breakdown work, you know, like levers and kind of just manipulating their body position. About four or five years ago, we did a full preseason of BJJ. Guys were getting wrecked, injured all the time because it's all these, like, not skinny, but skinnier than us, Jiu-Jitsu guys. And they come in and I think they just go, "We're going to teach these guys a lesson."
Yeah, yeah.
And this guy, we were trying to do breakdown technique. This guy rammed my head into the ground at one stage, like a full-on wrestling move. I looked down and I was like, why did you do that? I thought you were here to make us better. But I always think, like, guys who are in a specialist kind of event or sport, they think, these big rugby guys, they think they're so tough. They try and teach us a lesson.
Oh, man.
And they did.
Yeah.
All right, I might. We'll see you next week if I've done it. I keep putting this off for weeks now. Yeah, I'll definitely do it. And then it comes 6 o'clock the next morning. I'm like, no, I can't, man. All right, a lot of talk about from the games. Let's start with the men's game. I suppose the overall performance. What do you think Ireland did better or different that was made the overall performance seem better and the win?
They got a lot of unfair criticism after the Scottish game, and Scotland were well up for it. I thought when the weather was really good at the start, I thought Wales were going to beat them, but I thought Ireland were excellent. I thought they had good set piece space, and they just looked really fluid. They had good continuity there. Henshaw getting his hands free early doors. I thought Larmour, man, coming into it he's been really, really good. And like, because Rob Kearney's been like the staple 15 for so long, you kind of, there's a bit of a void there. And I think the same at two with Rob Herring, you know, with Rory leaving. I think Rob Herring had another good game. CJ was obviously outstanding. Kama was excellent. It's good. It was really, really good. It was a great result.
Mm. It's a few guys. So Larmer's a good example. Herring. Conway is another good example. Mm. Where these guys, for the first time, they're kneeling down a spot and they're walking into selection thinking it's very likely I'm going to be selected next week. So they're kind of growing in confidence those 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I would imagine they'll have even more confidence, albeit away to Twickenham. But it's nice to see guys grow into their position and grow as the tournament goes on. And as you say, because we've been used to other guys for so long, now we're getting all this fresh exposure to all this talent and ability that we've never really seen.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the best version of them as they grow. Conway in particular, I think he was unbelievable the weekend.
Mm.
And again, if you were to create a highlights reel, it would be all basic stuff. But he didn't put a foot wrong. Mm. Tackled really well, chased really hard, carried well, the little kicks in behind. Everything he did was perfect.
Yeah.
But no, again, there was no Charles Pietau about it. There was no Dan Carter, you know what I mean? There was no X factor. But it was all just really, really measured, really well executed basics.
They look very well coached, don't they?
Yeah.
And they all know their roles very well. And they're coming from a very good regime, previous regime anyway. And they're all really good players, and there's really good momentum across Leinster and Ulster at the moment as well. So,
if I was to look at it, I did 21 kicks from hand in the game, and I did some nerding on it last night. The variety of kicks, they had 5 chips, 4 grubbers, 2 long punts, 1 Gary Owen, only 2 box kicks, and then whatever kickoffs they had. And that was definitely, like, they'd 6 kicks in the first 15 minutes. And they were all little grubbers, little dinks. And that's something we haven't done in a long time, probably.
You've illustrated the array of kicks that are in a kicking game very well there.
Yeah.
Punts, grubbers, chips, Gary Owens. And what was the other one?
Box kicks.
Box kicks.
Oh, box kicks.
They didn't do a crossfield kick.
Oh.
It was the only one they didn't do.
They should have.
That's my one criticism. But I spoke to you about it before the game, and it was like, I think this is where they let themselves down with Wales last year. Wales kicked the letter off the ball for the whole Six Nations last year. We're probably the least expansive of all the teams, and they won the Grand Slam. Wales didn't kick the ball much yesterday, forced play a little bit, kind of similar to what Ireland did a little bit last year. And when everyone looks at Ireland over the last few weeks saying, oh, we need more expansive play, they actually passed the ball and offloaded less this week than they did against Scotland.
Mm.
But they were living in that controlled chaos. So all their chips were coming from Stockdale, from Conway. Like Sexton only kicked the ball a handful of times, but it was all the variety from different players. And if you take, like, I thought one good example was when Conway had that little chip into the corner and it bounced into touch.
Mm.
You could have been like, oh, why didn't he keep the ball? But at the line out, Williams dropped it. Remember off when he was trying to clear it? Ireland got a scrum and Furlong scored. In the second half, Stockdale had a little chip. And again, you're like, why did he do that? But Hadley Parks was judged to have passed a forward pass. Ireland got the scrum. Conway scored in the far corner. I was just getting these results from putting pressure on at the right times. And like, you know yourself, if you know that your team is going out to kick and to put in these kicks, everyone's going to be on the front foot chasing and expecting them. And when that's happening against you, like what England did to Ireland last year in the opening game of the Six Nations.
Yeah, that's the other example, isn't it?
Yeah, Slade is putting in these dinks and we're all like, fuck, you know. And Wales will often fill the field with 14 men, right? And leave the backfield quite open. And you could see after 15 minutes, Dan Biggar was dropping back and their wingers were dropping back after 3 or 4 phases. And then our, like, Henshaw was picking up soft corners everywhere, and how good was he?
He was absolutely brilliant.
It's a tough one with Ringrose now. I mean, if Ringrose is fit next week, what do you do there?
I put him back in.
Would you?
He's that good, yeah.
With Henshaw or Bundy?
I would start Ringrose at 13. I think Bundy hasn't really let them down, so it's a bit harsh on him.
But it'd be way harsher on Henshaw after the way he played.
Mm. I thought the combination they had was
I didn't think Nick Tompkins was.
He was poor, but very poor. But I felt he was exposed really well. You know, I think they targeted him. Henshaw targeted him, and that's the way I'd look at it. As opposed to going, he had a really poor game. It was kind of he was exposed.
Yeah, well, I just think that for me, Ringrose is one of the best 13s in the Northern Hemisphere by a long, long way, and he'd be one of my first names down.
What do you?
Yeah, I think I've said that anyway. The last few weeks, I agree.
It's the area that we have the most strength and depth.
Oh,
as the
don't get me wrong, I'm a massive fan. I think he's an unbelievable player, but I think I just I can't deny how good Henshaw was. I thought he was amazing.
Mm. It was excellent.
I thought we saw again Jacob growing a little bit towards the way he was, kind of 2018, where he was just dominating. And I think the key there is he got two or three early touches and he just got settled and he just got confident and he kind of grew into the game. So he was really good as well. All we've talked about is backs really, but up front, the boys were so solid. Tig was, he was massive, wasn't he? Scrum time.
Yeah, I thought we'd have more of an edge. I think Killer, when he came on, had a good impact there. That was a big scrum penalty. They won 5 metres out towards the end of the game. So look, it was an excellent performance. That's a really hard game to win, and it tees us up well now. Where you kind of go, well, if you beat England away, which we shouldn't be afraid of doing, then you know it's kind of in our control. Then going into the last couple,
What did you make of Rog and Matty Williams' little spat?
I thought Matty was way off with his comment on the minimum. I kind of knew what he was maybe trying to say, in that this is where Ireland should be all the time, and that's fair enough. And I think no one would agree with him more than the Irish players and the Irish coaching team. But having it as a minimum is just a weird way to frame it, and maybe that was. But
taxi is something it's a line that would come from an internal sort of like I can imagine them sitting down on Monday and saying, we've made our mark, that's our standard, now that's our minimum. From an internal source, the guys will go, yeah, we're buying into that, as in it's motivation to make sure that we maintain that level. But coming from someone on the outside, it's a little bit tough. Rog kind of summed it up. That was better than the minimum. That was a big performance.
Yeah, it was great. It was one of those moments.
Yeah.
And then they were on for the French-Italian match yesterday, and I was like, come on, and the popcorn out, ready for it. And you didn't see that, Rog. His opening comment, I think, Joe Malloy asked him a question, and he went, his voice, he's flaming his voice. Excuse me. Joe Malloy's like, do you want me to get you some water or something? So it was perfect, because I'd say everyone in Ireland was like, what's going to happen here? It was just like dust came out of his mouth. But no, I think they were a bit nicer to each other. Didn't kick off as much. From the English post-match interviews, did you see...
Ellis Genge.
Genge, somewhere he came out and called sausages, was it? The people who are commenting, but he was going so well. His comments were like, the sausages, isn't it? And then he takes a swig of a beer. Did you see that part?
No. Smell it?
No, but it was like, he was like, I've got a beer in my hand. I'm going to drink beer on national television. And it was like as if, like, when you go on holidays when you're 16 to a country where you're allowed to drink at 16 and your parents give you a beer, and you're like drinking it in front of your parents. Yeah, it was a bit dorky, but also Eddie Jones came out and pointed out that one of his staff was bottled by someone. But it clearly looks like the wind bottled him.
Yeah.
The wind.
Even bottled, though, it sounds like someone smashed the bottle and stabbed him with it.
But it was a plastic. It was a plastic bottle that blew off the upper rafters onto the bus and blew along the bus and then dropped down onto your man's head. Like, if you were someone to bottle him and you were like, threw it, like, for it to fall, you want to be very accurate for that. But, there wasn't much to talk about in that game, was there?
It's a terrible game.
Awful.
Myself and Isaac Boss, before games, used to play a little kicking game in the warm-up called Mistakes. We used to stand like 10-metre line and 22, just between the 5-metre and the touch line, and just kind of grubber to each other to try and just get hand-eye, kind of get warmed up a little bit. And to me, like, you played first to five, Bossy always beat me. I beat him one time in Galway, and then Ulster got beat. So then he thought that was a bad omen, so he always thought, like, you can never beat me ever again. But to me, the Scotland-England game was just one huge game of mistakes. Just keep kicking behind and someone will cock up, and whoever cocks up the least is going to win the test match.
Yeah.
And then Hogg then kind of cocked up. Goodbye.
My Guinness match point prediction was a draw for that match.
It's risky, man.
That's very risky. Very That's not risky. A numbers game.
But like, I just got cocky after last week when I was doing so well in Flowser. How are you so good at this when I just picked three random results? So I got cocky. But it was 3-3 with feckin' 9 minutes to go. I was like, come on. What a result. But it wasn't to be. Stuart Hogg, yeah, I would have felt worse for him if he'd not put the ball down and they'd scored a try from it.
Yeah.
Because that after not putting the ball down last
week.
The French match. I was so excited in that first 20 minutes. I was like, come on, French. Come on, France, kill them. Put 60 points in them. And then they just got a bit sleepy.
Yeah, I got really frustrated because you'd like to imagine, like, the talk after, because you saw England getting to the World Cup final, I thought, like, oh, well, France, maybe with bringing in some specialist coaches now. They made a big deal out of that they had specialist coaches in every area, and, you know, that means one person's responsible for one thing, they're accountable for that, and, you know, you see a marked improvement in performance, and their D was excellent against England, and their general play was excellent. But I think England have just been, like, I understand the conditions were terrible against Scotland, but when you take Willy Vonopola and Manitoulagi out of that English team, it just changes the dynamic of the team. And I thought England must have been just really, really poor, because I thought France were poor, man. The fact that the structured parts of their play, like their ability to exit and get out of their half, was so frustrating, because I just wanted them to see them play well.
But they weren't poor against England, though, I don't think.
No, they weren't, but
it was a different I think it's typical French. 1 minute they're so emotional, so up for beating England in Paris. And then the next week they just say, oh, geez, we're just playing.
But I was hoping that there'd be a build off that performance, that there'd be better, that they wouldn't be so inconsistent off the back of this new coaching team. I was thinking maybe that's what it's about, because they were excellent all the way through the English game, you know.
But I still think they're not. They're still emotionally driven, and it takes a big game against England. So then the next week, then there's just a bit of a hangover, and then they're playing Italy, and then they just can't really be arsed, and they kind of do whatever they have to do.
Yeah.
To win the game. But it was the same. It was like giving away, they must have given away 6 penalties in a row at one stage, because they're just they just look lazy at times. They just can't be out, and they're so
as opposed to being focused on an actual very slick game plan that's operating perfectly, it's an emotionally driven performance.
I think so. We've done this before the World Cup. Did they beat Scotland?
Yeah,
and we were
France
all
are back.
France are back.
Yeah,
it's always premature. No, it's only Italy, and they got away with it, and they could easily kick on, and we could see more performances like we saw against England. But France are just prone to going back to their default, which is not being smart with the ball, making stupid decisions, giving away stupid penalties, and generally not really being up for it. And then the next week, then they'll get emotional, and we see. I think as long as we see more of that, then I think we'll be happy. But I think it's a lot to ask for France to go the way they've been over the last 5-6 years, to now be really pragmatic, really organised, and just turn into the machine that England have been, bits and pieces, and Ireland have been over the last few years. It's just not very French.
No, but that's what we were expecting to see. Like, remember when we had the live show and Eddie was on, and Eddie was saying, like, when he coached Ireland, France were a massive threat.
Yeah,
they were really, really good. And then as coaching improved the level of consistency around the areas of, you know, the mechanical areas, not the magic areas, like just like teams' defensive systems, their set piece organization, their restarts, their kicking game. As the level of coaching globally, you know, improved, you start to see more consistency in that in all teams. And you just like to see that, you know, okay, well, you should start to see this in France as well. And I thought then that, like, when you see the quality of their players, like, and then you think if they could just harness some of the, like, harness some of their talent on the attack side and just put in the basic fundamentals that all the other international sides seem to clean up, and there's because they're so brilliant to watch. But I didn't see it yesterday, and it disappointed me.
Yeah. Did you see Baptiste Sarand's try?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Phenomenal. I was hoping you were going to say, did you see Fabien Galthié's glasses? Which are outrageous, man. They're like massive.
Edgar Davids.
They're like so, they're the lenses on, or the rims on them are so thick. Mm. It looks like a Thunderbird. yeah. So, like, they're just, they're so brilliant, and their rugby is so natural that you just kind of go, I don't know. I just would love to see them be more competitive at another level, you know.
Yeah, it's some, I would take confidence now if I was in the Irish setup of going over there.
Absolutely.
I've just seen that game and how Italy kind of stuck at it and frustrated them and just pounced on their mistakes. Mm. And I think with the back three, the French back three, you can put them under a lot of pressure. You saw when they were kicked the ball all the time, and Tomás is just taking these chances that there's absolutely no need to take, and knocking on the ball for that first try when he got turned over. So I think if Ireland can adopt a similar approach to the weekend and put pressure on the back three, kick a lot, frustrate the crowd, I think, yeah. After watching them last week, I was like, fuck, but now I'll be like, this is a great opportunity for Ireland to go there.
But they will be fired up to play Ireland, though. We will see an emotional side of them.
Mm. But I think if you're prepared for it, where England weren't prepared, but like, that defense should be, you should be able to expect that, no matter whether they're emotional or what. It's only lads getting off the line. And
but man, you're saying that, but that's not what we saw. That's my point, is that like, it doesn't take ability or anything like that to just be good in defensive systems. It just takes effort. And that's what frustrated me so much. I thought that I saw it in the English game, and I was like, okay, well, we should see it. If we see that level against Italy, then they'll kill Italy, you know, but I didn't see it. Hmm. We were chatting in the car on the way up, Trimby, and I was saying about like, what the reason you get so frustrated, because France are, like when we were growing up, like I remember going to see, you get a schoolboy ticket to go to watch Ireland, like, and when we're going to watch Ireland, you'd be hope that Ireland would barely beat Scotland at home, and then when France would play, France were just so much better than everyone else. But then as all the other teams got better with their coaching structures, France just stayed where they were. And you remember we played, I was saying to Baz in the car on the way up, like when we played France in 2006 in the Six Nations, it was like we were losing by 40 points at half time, and I remember like just running around the field but not knowing what was happening, like they were just chipping the ball over our heads and catching it. We were like, I can't even tackle anyone. And then the second half, then they completely switched off, and we scored like 35 points or something like that.
Did you come on and score a couple?
Yeah, that was Cedric Amons.
Yeah,
Jojon was tearing it up. Vincent Clerc. It was those lads.
And like that, like when they can do that and then just switch off, you're like, well, if they could just get someone to, I don't know, it must be something that I think lots of foreign coaches probably see French rugby and they go, if I can harness all that magic and attack, I'll just put the structure in, because. Because that's what coaches can do, is they just put structure on the game and try and, but it's to create that, that's the easy part of coaching, is putting structure on it. Like, it's not the developing the part of the players, is the unstructured part of it, and having players who can make decisions in open play and the French players can do that, you know? But it's like, they should be able to do, it's the easy bit that they're not doing well.
Yeah. That was the day Neil Francis give Tommy a 0 out of 10.
I remember playing in the game and I'm going, this is like one of those games I used to watch when I used to watch the Six Nations, where France is just ripping them apart, but we're the ones getting ripped apart here, and I don't know what to do. Like, we're just running around, just the ball was just going ping, 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 ping.
Yeah.
Is it that, of all atmospheres you've played in, is that the kind of the most surreal, like, as in, or...
It's actually not a massive atmosphere at Stade de France. It is at the start when they're all. But see, once France have scored a couple of tries, then they kind of go a little bit quieter. I think like what a more intense atmosphere was at Marcel Michelin. Is that it? Where Clermont play? I was there with Ulster recently. Yeah. That they keep it going the whole time.
That's singing and chanting and drumming
non-stop,
and
non-stop the whole time. But it can't. They're noisy one way or another. They're either really excited, really enthusiastic about their team, or if they're not happy with their team's performance, then they're really aggressive. But one way or another, it's still an amazing atmosphere. But I always thought Stade de France is a little bit, it's a little bit corporate. It's a little bit spread out, and it's not as much of a cauldron.
I don't know. I know what you mean, though, where you can just feel the ebb of when they start hitting form, and you can hear the crowd kind of get into it, and it's just like, it's just so fluid then. You're like, this is really, really hard to stop. Once they get a little bit of momentum and they get into that kind of flow and the game just becomes just Juve, you're like, shit, get them out of this because they're way more skillful than us. But Ireland can mix it now, man. Ireland have, you know, like you said, if you look at the back three, look at Stockdale, Conway and Larmour, like those guys are game breakers now, all of them. So,
well, 2018, when they won the Grand Slam, that wasn't straightforward in Paris.
No.
Ireland probably weren't great. It was the first outing. And then obviously it took a moment of brilliance from Johnny.
Yeah. And it's Twickenham next, obviously, in 2 weeks' time. England will have a point to prove. They've certainly got a, I don't know, they've a weird cloud over them at the moment, and they're trying to...
Big cloud of sausages.
And bottles. Selection-wise, Keith Earls obviously raised his hand, had some huge moments on Saturday as well. That pass for Larmour
was
unbelievable. He also had another offloaded to Larmour as well. And Larmour nearly scored. And he put Conway away as well at another point. He's always been overlooked as a 13. He's been written off as a 13, I suppose, not overlooked since probably 2011, 2012. He played in the World Cup in 2011, I think, at 13. I always think, like, he's one of, especially for Munster now, he's one of Munster's most experienced, talented players. And he can pass the ball as good as anyone, as you see. Defending him at 13 is an absolute nightmare. A lot of people would say he's too small to play 13, which I disagree. His decision making is really good. He's so focused that I like him on the bench now, because I have to say, bringing him on and having his ability coming off the bench, you'd be like, oh my God, this is what a rocket up your hole. but yeah, what are your thoughts on that? Would you
generally as a
13, or would you prefer to see him on a wing?
I'd prefer to see him on the wing, because I think we were talking about it earlier. Ringrose is first name down, and then this is the only week where I would kind of challenge that, because the two boys played so well, and then you got Chris Farrell there as well. I think there's enough centres all doing brilliant.
I put him ahead of Chris Farrell at the moment as a 13. I think it's not a huge difference going from the wing to 13 when you've got experience in there. And a fella of Keith Earls' experience and his ability, 13 is a massive position on the field to have someone with that kind of ability. Why not put him in there?
Has he played much 13 for Munster this year?
He hasn't played there in years.
No.
Then
he was covered there. When he first came into the team, he was 15 and 13, and he was carving up all the time. And I remember when we went up to national camp, Dricko just saying, like, this guy doesn't... Like, when he just plays instinctively, he has you. It's when he starts to get the ball and think for a second, it gives you a chance to recover. But if Earlsy just plays instinctively, gets the ball, puts footwork on, his acceleration is so... He just creates so much separation between himself and the defender. Once he steps, he's just so hard to defend. But I think probably there was Maffey at 13, wasn't there, as well, when Rua stepped out, and they pushed Maffey to 13.
That's when Keith came into 13.
After Rua?
After Rua, yeah.
Yeah.
And with Warwick there and Maffs at 12, and I ended up starting playing on the wing then, and playing outside him on the wing as well.
Did Jean de Villiers not come in then and push Maff to 13?
No, de Villiers to 13. I think Maffs was always 12.
No. I'm sure. Maffs went to 13.
Okay.
I've
played outside him. I played outside him at 13 when he was 12 a few times. Played outside him on the wing when he was 13, and everyone has to sit down when he gets the ball. You're kind of, you know, it's so you, the space create opens up all around him. And whatever about Ireland, as you said, there's a lot of competition there. But what he did at the weekend, 13, I think Munster should seriously look at him as a 13.
Yeah, well, if you look at it now, Munster are going to be well stocked with Delenda there. Mm. They've got Scannell and Goggin and Arnold, and then they've got Shane Daly's and all. Maybe he's not considered as an option in the centre, but they've Farrell and then Earnsy in there as well. So, I know exactly what you mean. If I was the winger outside the 13 and Keith Earls gets the ball, I'm like, I've got to stay tight with my 13 here because Keith Earls could stand him up and go around him. Ireland are in a good place having him there.
But realistically, so for Munster, fine, there's a conversation to be had there, but for Ireland, for this Six Nations, I don't think you can realistically start him at 13 because he hasn't played all season. He come off the bench and then it's a different game. So was it second half, obviously, was it?
Henshaw hasn't played there either.
How much did he?
I think end of the first half, Henshaw came off, yeah.
Yeah, so how long did he play? 20 minutes then, Earlsy?
No, the second half.
All the whole second half?
No, Henshaw started the first 5 minutes, I think, of the second half, did he? No?
Did he even make it to... Yeah, maybe he did,
I think he did, yeah. So it was at least first, 35 minutes. Yeah. Henshaw hasn't played 13 either, and look at the performance he put in. To be honest, I think Ringrose isn't going to be back to the last game. Henshaw will probably start 13 again if his HIA is okay. But, like, having Keith Earls, man, to come on into 13.
Yeah, come on, that's fine. Or, he's a perfect number 23.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't think...
Don't think he'll get into the starting 23, maybe.
You can let him and Conway fight it out, but again, even for right now, I don't think you can...
Yeah.
He definitely can't take Henshaw's place if he's fit. He definitely can't play in the centre, I don't think, because he hasn't played enough this season. Mm. And I don't think he's going to get ahead of Stockdale or Conway.
Yeah.
But the point I was going to make was, if he starts, it's a very different role to him coming off the bench. Him coming off the bench whenever Ireland are already dominant, it's a different game, it's a different role, and it's a lot easier. He looked great, but
I wouldn't say they were, like, that second half, they were under the absolute pump, like the wind into their faces. Wales get, that's what was Wales... Purple patch and
the game gets looser as the game goes along. If you come off the bench, it's always a slightly easier role. He was brilliant, like that pass and the offload, and he looked really lively.
I thought it was the best I'd seen him for Ireland in a long time, and that's why I got so excited.
Don't forget how brilliant he's been on the wing for the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
But I do too.
No, I think we're on the same page, but it's very exciting. I didn't see the 20s in Friday night. Did you watch the 20s?
Mm.
Great win.
It was really good because it wasn't a polished performance by any way, but it's about seeing players with a rounded skill set there, and I thought there was some guys there who really put their hand up. I thought Finley, the 9, got man of the match, but I thought Clarkson, the tight end, was awesome. The hooker, Tom Stewart, I think his name is, he got an awful lot of ball just from Welsh overthrows at the line out, and he was impressive. But I think the tight head there is really good, Clarkson. I watched him last year, really, really athletic. He's great acceleration, dynamic. His set piece is improving every year. There's a lot of Orm McNulty, you know, really good feet. There's a lot of quality players there. It was really enjoyable.
Mm. Yeah, I watched the women's game yesterday, and that was also unbelievably enjoyable. Probably the worst conditions of the lot. There was hailstones going across the pitch of the whole weekend. It was brutal. But like Wales battered the Irish line for the first 20 minutes. And then, Jesus, Ireland. But Pat, you were at it, were you?
No, I was just watching it as well, yeah.
Telly, yeah. Bevan Parsons, man.
She's classy.
She's unreal. Yeah, and the entire Irish front row actually were just so good. Solid carries. Really good kind of... Their game plan is bang on. They're just really tight and very functional. Like Claire Cohan played her first game, or second cap, I think, ever, or something like that. And she just controlled it perfectly. And Senna Nuoppa is next level. She's so aggressive. And I thought Emer Constantine was brilliant fullback as well.
Yeah.
Really solid. No hot water in the showers kind of for the Welsh team. Left a serious sting in it afterwards. I think one of the Welsh players came out and said there was no hot water. She was...
Yeah, Robin Jenkins came out and said that, shivering away at the sideline.
It was so cold.
And I think the IRFU apologised afterwards as well, apologised to the Welsh team and turned out
to send them over some hot water.
There was nothing worse, was there? Fucking hot water. Having a cold shower, like, what's the point?
I just want to, you're talking about the women's here, but to go back to the, we're talking about the end of the France-Italy game as well, and the I think it was Tommaso Allan who just kicked the, hoofed the ball out.
Yeah.
When they took a quick conversion, and it didn't, it looked like they were going to go try and get the bonus point, and then they just fucking next possession hoofed it out.
I was especially upset because I had predicted in the Pint Predictor France winning by 24, and they were winning by 18, and they had the ball and they were going well, and then I was anyway try the other end. So then I was hoping that we would get another wee play where Italy would fire something.
I was 24 as well. Yeah, I was like,
But why did the Italian lad kick the ball off the field? I missed that completely.
I have no idea. The whole point in taking the quick conversion was to give them an opportunity of chasing the losing bonus point.
Yeah.
So they received the restart. Okay, great. Yeah. Everything's gone according to plan so far, and then he just kicks it out. No, he wasn't in a great position.
I thought he got turned, man. I thought they turned the ball over and got put in behind him. And Tommaso Allan had to run back, get the ball, and he was in his own 22.
I don't think so. I think
they had possession. They just threw it back to him. Yeah,
they passed it back to him, and then he just hoofed it out.
And then he was just like,
hoofed it out in his own 22.
Sorry, he was autopilot.
Yeah, in his 22.
Was he in his 22?
He was in his 22. I'm sure that they got turned over and the ball got put in behind him.
No, I think it was just passed back to him. Yeah, and he just kicked it out, and everybody looked at him like, that wasn't what we were gonna do.
Yeah, I was saying it was like Matt Dunning got the drop goal whenever the Waratahs were chasing the bonus point. They needed a try, and he nailed the drop goal. The loose head prop nailed a drop goal from halfway. He was celebrating.
They needed a try.
And then they needed a try. It was pointless. Game over.
He got a drop goal from halfway.
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
Yeah.
Jesus. I watched a bit of Super 14 actually at the weekend. It's good. Not as good. The defences are so shite that it's hard to fully buy into it.
they're a lot more passive. The skill set is way higher in Super Rugby. And obviously the conditions are better for playing running rugby, but the defences are a lot more passive as well in general.
Yeah. Enjoyable to watch. Alrighty, just to let you know that the House of Rugby is doing another live show ahead of Ireland's Guinness Six Nations encounter with England. Myself and the two lads here will be joined by Leinster and Wallabies superstar, chiselled beard, sunken eyed, handsome movie star,
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Scott Fardy. Wouldn't Daniel Day-Lewis be great? But Scott Fardy will be joining us, and we'll have another special guest yet to be announced. That will be in the Cafe on Seine next Wednesday, or is it Tuesday?
Next Wednesday, yeah.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Next Wednesday, February 19th. Pat, you might release more details in the Facebook group, how to get tickets, et cetera.
Yeah.
Deadly. All right, will we get to our Pint Predictor leaderboard? I think I was fifth on the Guinness Pint Predictor leaderboard, where you were dead last at one point.
That was only on the rounds. That's on rounds. Round by round. Overall, I'm like seventh or eighth or something like that.
Overall, like when England scored that try on Saturday, with 10 minutes to go, I went on the Guinness Pint Predictor, and because the result hadn't come in yet, I was top of the league and you were bottom. That was overall.
No, they don't update it like that, man.
No, it hadn't been updated yet because the game wasn't over yet.
Mm.
But then when the game finished, obviously you came off last place.
Yeah, you still took a picture of it like a dickhead and put it on Twitter, and I was like, well, this doesn't make any sense.
I was like, no, this is my one opportunity to be top of the leaderboard.
So I was second last in the round.
Second last. Weekend.
Only because David Flatman forgot to get his predictions in. So I'm not in great shape.
Yeah. We both have 26 points, Jerry. At the weekend, you only got 22. You're currently in 547th position in the House of Rugby League. And for those of you that don't know, the Guinness Pint Predictor does pretty much what it says in the tin. You predict the winner and the margin of the Guinness Six Nations every week, and if you're within 3 points, you win a pint of Guinness.
Yeah,
right.
So we're going to be playing all the way through the
Hastings screwed me, man. Hastings screwed me. If Hastings hadn't nailed that penalty, I'd have got a point. But they sent me a point anyway.
Kind.
Nice.
Where'd you get it?
I was at home on a Sunday at like 7 or 8 o'clock, so I didn't like. Right, I'll head out in the storm now and go for a pint.
Deliveroo.
You can gift them.
Can you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Deliveroo a pint to your gaff. Mm-hmm. All right, well, get involved throughout the championship if you want. You download the Matchpoint app using the league code HORIE, H-O-R-I-E, and check out our noble yet naive efforts in predicting the games. We've got some serious good prizes coming up as well. If you're at the top of the overall table at the end of each round, you'll win Guinness Six Nations tickets, which is pretty class. The winner this week, John Lee, with 74 points and two perfect scoreline predictions. Perfect scoreline predictions.
That's phenomenal.
Maniac.
But are they perfect, or is he just within 3 points of the result?
Perfect scoreline predictions, I presume, is...
you got the winning margin right twice, yeah.
Right, yeah. That's incredible. I finished top of the House Rugby League round one, so congratulations, John. You've won two tickets for Ireland versus Italy at the Aviva Stadium early next month. And two tickets for Ireland versus Italy's women's game at the Energia Park the day after. Well, we did a forfeit last week, which was to call Matt Williams.
We call him again.
Which was...
Hi, Lottie, it's me again.
It'd be less awkward than it was on TV between himself
like
and Raj.
I must say, I felt like a bit of a douche calling Lottie last week.
Did you?
Yeah, I felt like it was a bit unkind.
But he came across so well.
He did. He was great. And that almost made me feel more guilty because he was like, Trent, it'd be great to hear from you. You're doing so well. That show last week was great. I said, thanks, Matty. I'm
pulling your pants down
Yeah. Felt bad. Did feel bad.
Not a fan.
No. Okay, so we won't do that this week.
Yeah, it's a bit mean, I think.
Okay. Well,
unless you want to call Matty. I could call Matty and apologize.
We'll just have a section where you call Matt Williams every week. Well,
it might not be me. It might not be me every week.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, Pat, you decide. What's the ultimate forfeit this week? And who gets it this week?
Well, it's Trimby again.
Just take your time. Think about it.
I was going to get you to call your former club, your former province up. Mm-hmm. And have a natter with them on the phone and...
Call, like, the office?
See if they've got a job going for you, yeah.
Right.
Oh.
Do you like that?
Who am I calling at Ulster, though? Am I calling Dan McFarlane? Like,
no, front of house.
Okay. They're not going to be in a position to give any jobs away.
That's the great thing about it, yeah. You'll just be... But you have to seem like you're clueless enough when you're ringing up as well. And, like, you wouldn't really ring the reception at Ulster Rugby to look for a job, but that's what you're doing.
Okay.
How would
I pitch myself?
Yeah, what would you go in for? It's not aiming too high, like.
Why not?
Top job.
So where about it? Where's my skill set? Suppose just being signed with the fellas, maybe like a player liaison.
Yeah.
That's like a football soccer role.
Yeah.
Maybe we could introduce the player liaison.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not sure the lady selling tickets in the office. He answers the phones.
We'll try her.
Okay.
She needs an assistant.
Yeah.
Ulster Rugby, Maeve speaking.
Hi, Maeve. How you doing? It's Andrew Trimble here.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you?
You well?
Yeah,
I'm good.
Good. Is it busy today?
Well, there's a bit of deliveries coming and going, and yes, a few visitors in.
Okay.
The phones aren't going mad, though.
Yeah, are the fellas back from holidays yet?
I'm not sure. There's quite a lot of parcels here for them that they've been told about and they haven't come for them, so I'm not sure if they're there or not.
Okay.
Was there somebody in particular you were looking for?
No, Maeve. Really, it's I suppose it's just, you know, since I finished playing rugby, you know, just I suppose... Things have dried up a little bit, so I'm just calling just to see if you need any help around the office.
Do you want to come and help out in reception? Because they're short-handed there.
Yes, well, if I could be the one that delivers all the parcels to the players.
Yes, that would work well. We'll get you a sack. You can be like Santa.
Yeah. Who has ordered most parcels? What player?
Oh, gosh, that is a tough one. Well, for a while, Robert Balakoon was in the lead.
Huh?
But Jacob might have overtaken him now.
Maeve, are you concerned that the players are ordering these parcels to their work address because they're embarrassed about the contents being delivered home?
in front of their wives.
Absolutely. It's very concerning. very tempting to open them up and see exactly what's there.
Okay. Grant, Maeve, listen, I need to get some tickets, but I'll call back later on whenever I get an idea of numbers.
Okay, Grant.
Sound. Thanks, Maeve. Talk to you soon. Cheers.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Lies make baby Ooh. Jesus cry. You lied to Maeve.
My Maeve hates me.
I don't think she hates you.
Not yet, because she thinks that was genuine. She doesn't. That's pending hate.
okay. It's hate coming.
She's got
away
thinking you're lovely.
Yeah.
She's like, he is so nice.
Yeah.
But
and Maeve's lovely as well.
Not tomorrow.
Maeve and Maddie, two lovely people, and I've just mugged both of them off.
Yeah.
We should start calling people I don't like.
Try and win them back over.
Yeah, or push them further away.
Yeah, that's great. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you might lose. There's a good chance you'll lose next week as well. It's your current record, so prepare yourself for it.
I have a feeling things are going to turn around.
Okay, just to remind you, download the Guinness Pint Predictor Match Pint app and use the league code HORI to join. Right, I think that's plenty of rugby this week to talk about. No games next weekend, so we will have put out our show later in the week. It's a live show. As we said earlier on, Pat's going to have more information for you on that during the week on Facebook. But until then, this has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Thank you for everyone for listening. Thank you to all of you watching on YouTube. Thanks to everyone who has put the show together, to Pat, to Anthony, to Paul, and to Ian. Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.